Yes, friends, it's time for Let's Talk Mental Health. This local program discusses behavioral issues of concern to the North Shore community and resources to help. Let's Talk Mental Health is produced at the studios of KTWHLP in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Good day and welcome to everyone to this month's broadcast of Let's Talk Mental Health. This month, we're going to be focusing on hospice. In fact, we are titling this Surviving Hospice, Life Goes On. This is a companion piece to a life series that has been done here at KTWH, and this has been called the Living Through the End of Life. It's a locally produced miniseries, which is a first for the radio station. Each episode explores topics faced by those dying and their loved ones. A wide array of issues are explored, including healthcare directives, end-of-life medical decisions, the emotional and spiritual process of leaving, grieving, and marking the passing of a human life. You'll hear the stories and insights of healthcare practitioners, grief counselors, spiritual leaders, family members, and caregivers. Producer Katja Gordon and a team of dedicated radio volunteers made key connections across the community to bring this program to the airwaves. Thanks to all who have graciously shared their time and voice to bring this valuable and heartful information to all those who choose to hear it. We also thank you, the listener, for your interest and your care concerning living through the end of life. Our program today is going to be a companion piece, and to lead us into the discussion about surviving hospice will be our guest speaker today, Katie Erickson. Katie is a psychotherapist with the Duluth Counseling Center in Duluth. Katie is a licensed professional clinical counselor with 10 years of experience working with and supporting individuals, couples, and families. She has had a wide variety of professional experiences over the years, including working in community mental health, and is currently working in private practice. Katie specializes in working with those who are struggling with anxiety, depression, grief and loss, caretaker fatigue, career counseling, adjustment to life difficulties, and life transitions. Katie recently lost her father in November. He died at home from complications of COVID-19. Katie and her sister were caregivers for their father for the past 15 years. Listeners, as we said before, our guest today is Katie Erickson, and I just got through reading your background and your bio, Katie. You have a lot of experience. Can you talk a little bit more about your professional and personal experience with caregiving, grief and loss, and adjusting as a caregiver after the person you're caring for has passed away or died?
I got into being a specialist for caregivers after, as you mentioned, that my dad had died in November. Me and my sisters had cared for him, along with help from some PCAs, for almost 15 years. He had a massive aortic dissection when he was 52 years old that left him needing pretty much 24-hour care. And he was very young at 52 to be going into a nursing home or a facility like that. So we did everything we could to care for him and keep him at home. And he suffered short-term memory loss from lack of oxygen when he had his initial event of the massive aortic dissection. And so I was 25 at the time, I believe, and I was not a therapist yet. So we cared for him, and so I have a lot of experience there as a caregiver and then professionally. I had graduated from college at that time, but then went on to get my master's in clinical mental health to work with people who had experienced the role of caregiving and all of that that goes along with that role. I volunteered after that at St. Luke's in the hospice department as a volunteer, and I did that one day a week for a couple years while I was going through grad school. There's my professional and very personal experience in a nutshell with working with people and firsthand experience of long-term hard caregiving support.
Well, Katie, thank you very much for the insightfulness of the information. As we've informed the listeners, our subject today is not an easy one. Surviving hospice, life goes on. Where should we start?
I think one of the most important places to start mentally is first and foremost to know that there are no two deaths that are the same. Should you have lost someone before, this could be totally different. Or if this was your first time losing someone, there's no manual of how things will go emotionally and spiritually, perhaps, for you. There is no two deaths, like I said, that are the same. And so it might be completely different than what you would have expected because you'd prior lost someone, or you haven't lost someone and you didn't think you would be reacting as you are, or you thought you should be reacting much more sadly or upset than you are. And it's just one of those things where it's very hard to predict, and not to judge yourself that you should, or your sister did this, or your mom is feeling this way, etc. That you need to accept you individually, how you are feeling and processing and dealing with the death of a loved one that you cared for. One of the common models in the therapy world has been around for a long time, and it's the 5 stages of grief by, she's now deceased herself, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Her theory is that there are 5 stages of death, and that we all go through them, and we go through them for different periods of time. The stages do not go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I will tell you the 5 stages here, and then I'll go back to how we process those differently. So the first stage for her theory is numbness and denial and isolation. The second one is bargaining and control. The third one is depression and despair. The fourth one is anger and frustration. And then the fifth is acceptance and peace. You may be experiencing one of these or two of these for a longer period of time. You might go from accepting one day to the next day, bargaining that if only you had done this, or if you would have got on this experimental drug trial, or so bargaining looks like that. Depression is just that, which is something we'll talk more in depth about later in this segment. There are a lot of caregivers who are suffering with undiagnosed depression. It's a very common thing that we see in mental health and caregiving that people don't realize or don't take time to tend to themselves and their depression because they're so immersed working with their caretaker, their caregiver. Just know that these theories you can experience, and they can be that, as I said, just one day you can accept and you think you're moving on, and the next day you're back very depressed, and that is completely normal. Some people can take forever to accept. Maybe they don't ever accept. So you might not go through all these stages. That's completely normal that you would experience these 5 stages, or some of the 5 stages if you don't experience them all. And as I said, you will experience them very differently than even loved ones. I have a sister who lives in Minneapolis who did not caretake for my dad very much because of the distance. And my other sister did a lot more of the caretaking by choice than I had done. I did a lot, but she did daily, every day. I was more a weekly caregiver. But even the 3 of us, who are all sisters, have experienced the loss much, much differently than the other, even though we're all sisters with the same father. So that is completely normal. And comparing yourself or judging yourself is never helpful. You have to have some compassion for yourself, and we'll talk some more about that later in the segment. There is a book written by the author David Kessler. He was a colleague and a friend of Ms. Kubler-Ross, who had the 5 Stages of Grief model, and he recently, in September of 2020, had a book published called Finding Meaning, the 6 Stages of Death. And his book explores the many ways to honor a loss by embracing the uniqueness and the value of a person or that relationship when it's gone. And I found this book extremely helpful personally and professionally. I will use this with many of my clients going forward. And so that is a great resource, and it's a new resource. And I looked up it on Amazon today, and it has about 5 stars out of about 1,500 reviews. So other people are finding that really helpful. There's also another book that he co-wrote with Ms. Kubler-Ross, and that was called On Death and Dying. I think Ms. Kubler-Ross has published about 15 or 16 books before her death. So that they are a good resource to find books that are sound on loss and caregiving and all the things that go along with dying and death. One of the things that isn't talked about a lot that I think is helpful to talk about for people who have lost someone that they had cared for is a relief. I think a lot of people, and I know myself and my sister at the end, because we had cared for him for so long, 15 years, and it wasn't easy. He had what was classified as a TBI injury from losing the oxygen to his brain when he was on the heart and lung machine. And so he had a lot of anger outburst, and he was always throwing things and kind of violent and wasn't the dad that I had had. My sister and I, we used to joke that we just wished that he maybe would get COVID-19 because he was suffering and there was nothing anybody could do for him. He didn't live a very good life. He was very physically limited in what he could do. And so we would always joke. And then that's what happened. He got COVID-19. We knew that if he got it, he wouldn't survive it, just of his physical condition. And so that's something that people don't want to talk about. They don't want to talk about because it sounds harsh. It sounds mean to just be relieved when your caregiving duties are over. And that uncomfortable mixture of feelings, which for me and most people is sad. But like I said, glad that the struggle was over for my dad and did suddenly end. And so that relief is real for a lot of people. It, again, it's hard to want to talk and admit that verbally out loud to people. Just knowing that that is a real thing, and not to judge yourself about your conflicting emotions at caregivings, and not to feel guilty about it, because you have earned that relief. Caregiving work is very hard work, and especially when it goes on for months and months and years. Often, I know myself and other caregivers, it takes away from other life activities. Now you get your life back, or hopefully some sort of life that may have been put on hold. You earn that relief. I know it was a relief to not have the constant fear and tension and loss of sleep, wondering if he was going to fall in the middle of the night. My father didn't have the resources to have people at night. We would stop in until it was bedtime, but still getting up in the middle of the night to use the washroom. And there were many, many falls, and just having that relief that has ended, and maybe go back to not being on edge all the time, waiting for the phone to ring from the life alert that he had fallen company in the middle of the night, or the fire department. And just knowing that relief, as I keep saying, but I'm going to say again, is it normal? And it's not something people talk about. I know I've said that many times, and people feel very guilty for feeling that. And accepting that it is very normal to feel the contradictory emotions when the work of your caregiving has ended. Self-acceptance, too, is a big thing, that you did the best that you could under the challenging circumstances, and that it is okay to feel whatever emotions you are experiencing throughout yourself in the process of what you as a caregiver, or what you're experiencing with now the permanent loss, whatever you're experiencing, giving yourself that acceptance, that self-acceptance, and knowing that feeling relief, if that's something you feel, is not the same as forgetting about that person. A lot of people judge themselves or think that they're moving on too quickly, or that they're now not honoring, or they're forgetting this person. And when the relief of caregiving is over, it doesn't mean that you're going to throw a party to blot out the past. You can still savor the time that you spent with your loved one, knowing that, for instance, for me, my dad, if he knew how he was living, he wouldn't want to have lived that way and have the caregiver. And my sisters have husbands and small children at the time. Knowing that the caregiver person probably would want you to get on with your life and go back to some more normal activities, and just accepting however you're feeling during this period. And they're going to be very unknown, uncomfortable, and foreign feelings. And that's all part of the process.
Katie, would you have some recommendations for caregivers and other family members on how to manage after the passing of their loved one?
I think what's hard for people is people have a lot of pride, and especially the age of caregivers today are usually older They're not usually 25-year-olds like I got thrust into unexpectedly. I think older people have a hesitation to ask for help. They have a hesitation or think they're weak or think they're not strong, or their sister dealt with their husband in caregiving and she was just fine, appeared just fine, because she probably wasn't. But I think people have a very, very hard time asking for help. I think that that is going to get better as there's more younger people that seek mental health without it being a stigma. But for the older people, that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay that you yourself as a caregiver need help, whether it's the end of your caregiving or it's during while you're a caregiver. There is a saying that every good therapist has a good therapist. I started seeing a therapist before I was a therapist when I was 25. Just from the toll that it takes from caregiving and the new life as you know it. Like I said, having small children and trying to manage a brand new mom and taking care of my father. And so just knowing that there are people and therapists, support groups and out there, and there's online, and we'll get more into the local ones. But there's Facebook groups. There's just so many options. So however you feel comfortable, if you don't feel comfortable going personally to a group, but there might be online groups you might feel comfortable with people that don't know you and they're not from your town, just getting the help you need, because the toll it takes on caregivers' health is real. I mean, caregiving is very hard. People lose years off their life from the stress of it and from the lack of maybe taking care of themselves properly and the stress. Stress is a killer. We know that. Stress does kill. Just finding somewhere to get help and knowing that, me personally, I'm biased because I am now in the mental health field. Everybody that's a caregiver should have a therapist, because whether you think you need it or somebody needs it more, you can go to mental health. That's something people say all the time. Well, you know, Betty needs it more, so I don't want to clog up resources. There are enough people to help you as often as you need help. I ongoing have gone to my therapist the entire 15 years of my dad. In some months, I needed it weekly because of health issues that were going on or PCAs that couldn't go to work, and then I had to lose my work to cover just all the stresses that go along with that. And having some unbiased, non-judgmental person to help you and provide some hope. But just realizing that your work as caregiving is life-altering for most people. And I think people are too quick to judge or not realize what toll and what they are giving up to care for a loved one. Knowing that you lose a lot of who you are. People can get lost in knowing who they are, especially once their duty is relieved of and their loved one passes. And what do I do with all this extra time? What do I do with relationships and hobbies that may have been put on the burner, or activities while you cared for a loved one for months and for years? Trying to find a new identity is hard for people, especially as the older people get. I mean, it's harder to join new groups or new activities, but you're going to have a lot of time on your hands, most people. And knowing that that is common and trying to fill that time, not again to forget about the loved one, but to help not fall back or fall into depression if you don't already have that. And then also knowing society thinks, for whatever reason, that grief should be fast and that it's a quick process and then we move on. And for some people, it may be that. In general, that's not true. And I don't know why society thinks, well, life goes on and we move on. And it does. Life does go on and we do need to keep going. But it's not something, in my experience personally, it's not something you ever completely get over. You certainly can help yourself in how you're going through it, but not having a time frame set for yourself. If it's been 2 years and you're still been seeing a therapist and you feel down some days or you're feeling blue, like all of that is normal. And that might be that way for you next 50 years or as long as you live. It might be normal. Your normal might be you are able to move on rather quickly. So again, not judging yourself or comparing yourself to others and how they got their closure. And you might be struggling with giving. It's difficult for you to find closure of the death of your loved ones, but it appears Judy did just fine or whoever. Don't compare yourself to others. And we all know what we see on social media and what we see as the front of people is not usually all that You see the good. We don't see the struggle in a lot of people, and know that they are probably struggling or did struggle at times, and not comparing yourself. And then slowing down and allowing yourself the time to focus on yourself. A lot of times people feel selfish, or they feel like, well, they got all this house cleaning and projects and things that they didn't do while they were caring for someone else. And that is helpful to maybe get some of those projects done, but not doing that as a way to completely fill your time without reflecting and figuring out what you need. Most people don't know what they need. Figuring out what you need for yourself is actually a lot harder than people think. Stopping and assessing what you need, and if that's something you need to do with a counselor or a therapist or a social worker, and slowing down and finding the support groups or the resources where you live. Some of the ways people slow down and still honor their loved ones when they move on is reflecting on what your life was like before, practicing journaling, and finding ways to remember your loved one. It's really good getting to know oneself again, but sometimes people don't get there because they move on too quickly into everything that wasn't done or don't want to focus on themselves. And never, ever, ever, I can't say this enough, never be embarrassed or ashamed to ask for help or to go to counseling. You are not weak. You are not, there's not something wrong with you because you feel a certain way. The best thing you can do is get help. When I have people that were reluctant, a lot of the older generation is reluctant to get help and they seek help. I have people breaking down, crying, saying that they just wish that they had reached out sooner. You can get help at any stage for anything. It's nothing's minimalized. Nothing is judged by a therapist for when and what you show up for help for.
Katie, thank you. You had described before some of the symptoms of grief, talked a lot about the stress, depression, and the anger. And now you just let us know about asking for the help. As a therapist, can you reflect on what you would say for the individual experiencing these symptoms, when they should go ahead and get help, and where are some of those sources for help at?
The sooner, the better is always to get help, even if it's just exploring a support group and you don't even know or think you need help. Just exploring a support group or scheduling an appointment with a therapist or a social worker. Things that are common that we help people with is learning about bereavement and the process, much as I'm educating or explaining here. Learning about the bereavement process in the period of grief and mourning after a death that we talked about, or processing your feelings that you don't even know why you have them and they're a shocker to you, or it's not normal or what you thought. And then we help people gaining resilience and finding hope and finding other support and resources that they might need. And therapists also, identifying with a client healthy ways of coping. And then locally, we have great programs at Essentia and St. Luke's Hospital. I know a lot of the listeners are on the outlying areas of Duluth. Each do have a component that goes out in the community. So their main focus is not just on Duluth, where maybe before COVID, a lot of their support groups were held. Essentia has ongoing monthly, they're virtual now, grief support groups. This is for adults. There are resources for children, but those I'm not as aware of as the adult ones because I don't work with a lot of children. But Essentia could always guide you if you are, say, a child who lost a parent of cancer or something young. Both Essentia and St. Luke's, if you needed to know more than what I know right now about the adult groups, Essentia and St. Luke's giving their grief centers a call would be able to help you find anything that I'm not talking about here. I know due to COVID, like that, all of Essentia's are online for their grief support groups. There are also national ones, as I said earlier, that you can find if you Google grief support groups. Other ones where you can join in, say, Michigan or wherever, because they're not therapy, it's support groups. You don't have to get them in the state in which you are living. Therapy has to be done. Like, if you're a licensed therapist in Minnesota, you can only provide therapy to people in Minnesota. So Googling Essentia Grief or Grief Support near me, I know that Essentia's Grief Support Center, their phone number is 218-786-4402. Another one is the bereavement support at St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth. But what they have is they have two dedicated social workers, and they follow up with a bereaved person for 13 months after the death of a loved one. So their support services no additional charge for St. Luke's Hospice. And I'm not sure, they might help people that didn't go through St. Luke's Hospice. But what St. Luke's offers is phone calls from the bereavement coordinators and or volunteers. And then they offer grief counseling in person or over the phone. I do know that they can go out to homes for these services if people want them in person that aren't able to say you've been vaccinated and you can't get to them. And then St. Luke's also has written material by request, and then they send out mailings. And I do know that social worker for bereavement, she is great to deal with, Lori Williams. She's at St. Luke's. And then one of my colleagues who works part-time in the private practice that I'm in at Duluth Counseling Center, her name is Michelle Treader, and she is also the coordinator at St. Luke's.
Katie, we've come to the end of our broadcast, and I'd like to ask you if you could to concisely provide a summary of our discussion of the points you would want the listeners today to take away.
I think the biggest takeaway is that we will all suffer a loss at some point. Grief is personal and grief is unique. No two losses are the same for yourself, or as I mentioned, how I grieve and my process of losing my father versus my sisters, who are all within 2 years of my same age, is very different for all of us. And so judging, comparing, none of that's helpful. It's not going to get you anywhere useful. So don't do it. And do not be afraid to reach out for professional help and or on the internet finding support groups or finding some way to help yourself. There is no stigma that any health official or mental health person will have to you if you ask for help or ever minimize or judge whatever you are needing. Every day we meet people where they're at, whatever that looks like.
Today we have been discussing surviving hospice, life goes on. Our guest speaker has been Katie Erickson, a psychotherapist with the Duluth Counseling Center in Duluth. Katie, I want to thank you very much for all of the insight, all the information. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate your feedback. You can send emails directly to the station at ktwh.org, or the program also has its own email, and that is lcmhtf@gmail.com. Again, lcmhtf@gmail.com, and that stands for Lake County Mental Health Task Force, and that is the group under which this broadcast is being brought to you by. Additionally, there is the North Shore Mental Health Group in Silver Bay. They have a fantastic website. You need to check this out because they have daily encouragements, lots of resources available. The North Shore Mental Health Group strives to create safe and welcoming spaces in the Silver Bay, Finland, Beaver Bay, and Isabella areas for those living with or wanting to support others living with mental health challenges. GLAAD, Group for People Living with Anxiety and Depression and Other Mental Health Challenges and Their Supporters, is a confidential peer support group that meets every second and fourth Monday of the month from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Normally, they meet at the United Protestant Church in Silver Bay, but they have been meeting via Zoom since the COVID-19 outbreak. The rationale for the group is that their goal is to ensure that it is a safe place for everyone to both share and listen, and that we are not alone in our suffering. Our depression or anxiety is not all we are. The way to help ourselves and others is to share our own experiences, strength, and hope. The ground rules for the group are: what is shared here is confidential. Everyone has an opportunity to share equally. No one is forced to participate. Feel free to pass. Unsolicited feedback, crosstalk, or giving advice is strongly discouraged. We have respect and compassion for each person without judgment. If you are interested in joining the group, email nsmentalhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is nsmentalhealth@gmail.com. On the Lake County website, there is a Health and Human Services Support Guide, and in it you will see a listing for mental health resources, 9 pages of local resources with lots of websites, phone numbers, and information that you can use. In the county, we also have the Human Development Center, again accessible through Lake County website. And at our own Lakeview Hospital, they have mental health services being provided by a nurse practitioner. If you need it, look on their website. Until next time, for Let's Talk Mental Health, this is your host, Chris Belfield. Thanks for listening.